You can do more with your money if you have more of it. There, an obvious way to start a money podcast, but let's stay grounded in reality today. There's a reason income is sometimes called your first investment. If you earn more and you're thoughtful about where that money goes, you've got more options. But what happens when it's not that simple? Because for some people, advice like earn more or get a side hustle genuinely works. But for others, like teachers, nurses, public sector workers, it can feel completely disconnected from reality. You're operating inside tight pay bands with very little wiggle room. Now, I say little wiggle room because there's almost always some. And today we're going to look for that wiggle room and also talk about what really matters when income options are more limited. So, welcome to Ask the Experts, where each week people working in the money world answer your questions to get the answers you need right now. Making Sense has partnered up with Enable Me to get you the strategies for reaching financial freedom faster. Head to their website to learn more. Visit enable.me today. All right, this week in the hot seat, Kristen Sutherland from Enable Me, financial advisor extraordinaire, ready for the letter.
Yes, ready.
All right, here we go. Hi, Frances. I've been following you for around a year. Find your advice really helpful. I do have one stumbling block, however, that I was hoping you might be able to address on the podcast or newsletter. One of the key things you and other financial experts keep repeating is that it is important to find ways to grow your income. My issue is that I'm a teacher. My income is capped, and it is for a lot of teachers. It's not the sort of job that you can just get a second job, as there is so much work you need to do outside of your workday, especially if you also have kids. Sure, for subjects like maths, you can do tutoring, but it's not really a thing for my subject. My husband is always talking about how he needs to hustle and get a better job with more money, and it makes me feel rubbish. This is my own insecurity, not him. He was mortified when I told him that was how I felt. When increasing your income genuinely isn't an option, like for teachers or nurses, etc., what's the next best thing? Thanks. Okay.
Ooh, so, big question.
I know. So much in that. Income is capped.
Mm-hmm.
You must see this when you have clients come in. You must see people with these sorts of situations. So what is it like out there? How tough are these income caps to work with?
I really do understand for a lot of people that capping an income is hard, but it doesn't mean that that determines where we end up. So I've had clients over the years that have been in those industries. Actually, the ones that come to mind are teachers. So they came along, and I'll never forget, because we do this analysis on people when they arrive, where are you at and what's your position? And they came in and they were both teachers in Auckland. So, you know, hard place to live in terms of cost of living. And they came in, and I said, right, what have you guys got? They had 10 investment properties. They hadn't done anything outside of teaching. All they've done is over the long term is spend less than they earn and have a plan for investing. So it is possible with those capped incomes to get ahead. We just have to look at how we're using that money.
There's a saying that I really love of you can't read the label from inside the bottle. And I use that on myself all the time. I'm constantly seeking outside perspectives. It's really, really hard when you're in your own situation to find those opportunities. So when you have someone come into your office and they've got this sort of situation, where do you start?
It's trying to utilize really what they've already got. So if we really can't increase the income, can we use the skills and assets and things that they already own to get some more income? So I know there's a lot of talk about the side hustle, but we don't actually want to kill you by making, you know, you work so many hours. So can we monetize your skills in a different way where it's not too many hours? Say for a teacher, if we're taking the example of a teacher, could it be developing an online course that they only have to develop once and it's not using their time over and over again? Another way to look at it is leveraging the assets we've already got. You've got your home, like most people have, you know, maybe some space. Can you rent out a room? Might not be for everyone, but could you do it? You know, if we're really trying to get ahead, sometimes we have to make some sacrifices. So could we do that? Could we leverage other assets? Do we have a car space or something we could rent out? Interesting example, this one. So there's a teenager I know once that at school, if you didn't bring your PE gear to class, you got a detention or a class book. And so there was a, you know, it was a big outcome for people. So this teenager was renting out PE gear.
Not I once thought that's where day, you were about to go.
But
that's amazing.
Multiple times per day. So, you know, we were looking at three times a day. Won't name the teenager. But, you know, there is always ways at looking at the assets that we own currently to get some income on those. So
genius.
Yeah.
It's so funny. As soon as you mentioned that PE exam, I was like, is she about to? And then you did. I just think that's genius. I love people who think sideways like that. How brilliant. And I think the thing with the side hustles as well, I think it's really good that how you're saying, what have you got and how can you use it in a way that isn't more time? Because I don't love this idea of just grinding all the time. You know, life is for living. And yes, you might be trying to get ahead. You might be in a mode where you're really having to hustle and think sideways, and you're like, okay, we're in building mode and I need some extra coming in. What can I do? I don't want people working every hour of the day because what are you going to last a month? It's going to be so hard. Okay, so those are some side hustle ideas. And we're going to come down to, you know, how you use limited income as well. I just want to stay on the income thing for a bit longer as well, because there is the long-term strategies too, right? Where, you know, could you chase a promotion? Could you look at areas where you might earn more, like more specialized areas in your field, that sort of thing? Those are longer term strategies. They're going to take a while. Are they worth looking at?
Yeah, definitely. So if we can do things within our existing profession, and again, I myself have worked in a profession. I was a radiographer prior to doing financial advice.
Really?
So, and that was income capped, right? But I looked at, can I specialize? So, you know, I took the time to find out, firstly, what does your work need? Like, do they want you to specialize in something? Have a conversation with them about it. Could I do something, you know, or train further or specialize in something that gets me a promotion or somewhere up the ladder? Like, and then we, you know, step to that next income cap. So going and having the conversation with who is the person that could help you to do it at work, because that's really important. So I say to clients, if they don't know, they can't help you. So go along, talk to them, see what you can do. Getting a skill, another skill that maybe you can't specialize. So in radiography, I remember I went and specialized actually in mammography. So it was one of the areas that was in high demand at the time. So I went and got, you know, some extra study to specialize in that. But if there isn't that, then talking about what does the business need? What are the skills? Could you go and look at being the health and safety advisor or something? Is there a way within the existing job that you could get some extra skills that aren't necessarily specialty there, but are outside of that, that the business needs? And then negotiating at the right time with the business. So, you know, when a business is under financial stress or something, probably not the time to be going and saying, can I add some value? You know, is there something I can do? And over the long term, because we're talking long term here, finances aren't about I'm going to get rich quick overnight. It's about long term and how can I then use that extra money to invest? Because then the other side of that is what we do with it. So we've got a bit of extra money. What are we going to do with it? And how are we going to get the best bang for buck on that money?
Yeah, 100%. And let's look at that now, because let's say she's already looked at all these options for whatever reason, they don't work for her. Or maybe that's part of the long-term plan, but it's not happening right now. And I always say, what I love about, you know, earning more, of course you can do more if you earn more, obviously, but it's often a long-term plan. It might not happen straight away. Whereas changing how you handle your money now and where it's going, that is often, there's usually something you can do right now. So if you're saying, okay, all of that's great, what do I do with where my money is heading now? What are some different strategies you look at when someone's in this sort of capped income search?
If you've got a fixed income and we've got expenses, we've got to look at the expenses side of it then. So we sit with clients and we say to them, how much does your life cost you? Most people have no idea how much their life costs them or what it's costing them in mortgage, in insurance, things like that. So we do a really broad brush look at how can we get those expenses down? How's the mortgage structured? Is there something we can do to change either the length of the loan so that we get a bit more opportunity to invest some money along the way? Can we look at their insurances? Like, are their insurances fit for purpose? And are they getting the best bang for buck on those? So do they have too much insurance? Do they have too little insurance? Is the provider right? Can we do some savings there? So could we, what's called refinance the mortgage? So could we move that mortgage? Sometimes there's an opportunity to move it to another bank. We've just been through a big price war in the banks of them offering us lots of money to move. Could we do that? And for a lot of people, they don't know that's possible. They've stayed with their same bank all of their life and they're like, oh, I can move. And it's like, of course you can. Unfortunately, banks aren't loyal to us, so we don't need to necessarily be so loyal to them. And for clients, you know, especially the last few months, I've seen a lot of them getting sort of $5,000 to $10,000 in cash back from moving to another bank. So, you know, that's a whole lot of after-tax money that we're getting in that situation. So we can look at your expenses. We can also look at how you structure your money. So you in your everyday life, how are you spending that? And you would be amazed. And it's sort of across the board for clients. It doesn't matter if they're my minimum wage earners or they're a CEO, like how you structure how you do your spending is really important. So having a very structured, I'm going to determine what life costs me, my happy life. I'm not saying we're going without. You don't have to go without coffee. You just have to say, here's what's important to my life and here's how I'm going to spend it, and be very intentional about that. So we set up quite a structured environment for people of, here's some money you said you're going to spend. We're going to move that into an account. But when that money's gone for the week, we've made the decision that that's what we're spending. It's gone. So we make a different decision. It may be that you're like, oh, really need to spend more this week. And you make a conscious decision that's what you're going to do. But if that structure's set up and the environment is, you know, ready for you to be able to save, then that's how we can do it. And for a lot of clients, that really reduces the fritter or the extra money that doesn't make us happy than spending things by about 10%. So, you know, if we could get a 10% saving in your expenses, we could use that money to invest and we're not having to change the income side.
I love it. So you're basically using the good old economics nudge theory.
Yes.
Of make the good choice the easy choice, and anything else that you want to do, you still have the option to. Like you say, you can still move money across if that's what you've chosen, but it has to be an active choice. And then you think about it and you're like, okay, yeah, no, I actually do want to. This is going to add to my life, or this is a situation where I want to do this. Move it across. Great. Live your life. Great. But probably 3 weeks out of the month, you're not going to make that choice and you're going to just do the easy thing because the easy thing is happening in the background and the easy thing is also the good thing. So you quite like having multiple bank accounts, is that right?
Yes, not too many because I don't want to totally overcomplicate it. I have had people that come with 20. I'm like, oh my goodness, that would just
confuse
me. Yeah,
that is too many.
I like a good bank account structure, but 20 is too much. But, you know, say three accounts where we have one that's our everything goes into, and this is our, you know, holding sort of wealth account or holding all of our money. That's one we don't have everyday access to. So don't have your FPOS card linked up to that one. Have a day-to-day account where you say, I am going to transfer this amount per week and that's what I'm going to spend. You can work out what that looks like to make your life comfortable. So you get to make all the decisions on this. You know, you're steering the ship. So we move that across and then we have a bills account. So anything we can automate, let's do that. Let's make life as easy as possible and take all the thinking out of it. So we're only making those important decisions around what we like to say is our discretionary spend. So the things we get to make a choice on, because there's some things we don't get to choose. If you have to go to work and you've got to pay for childcare, you have to do that. We've got to pay our rates. We've got to pay our insurance. We've got to pay the bank. You know, they tend to come first. So all of those things are non-negotiable. Put that into a bills account. We don't have to worry about it. We don't have to think about it. The day-to-day account, that's what we get to make decisions on. So limit the decisions. Three bank accounts, keep it simple.
Always on the keep it simple, because again, with the nudge theory of making life easy for yourself, if it gets too complicated, you're just going to go, and you're not going to use any of it. Not so fun fact, when you take on a 30-year mortgage, you'll probably pay more than double what you originally borrowed because of the cost of interest. That's probably not the Kiwi dream you bought into. The team at EnableMe specialize in taking charge of your money and growing your wealth, including how to get rid of your mortgage faster. Book a consultation with an EnableMe financial advisor today by visiting enable.me. So if people are thinking investment and building for the future, is there a different strategy if you're on a capped income, or how would you go about that? Where do you find the money?
So I think if we're on this capped income, it's trying to move away from them. I can't do it. It's just, I will do it differently. So if we genuinely are capped and we've tried all the other things, like we've tried to increase income, we can't do it. We've decreased expenses. We've got a little bit. On lower incomes, it's about little bits often and consistency over time. So it's time that we'll build the wealth for us. And you can build wealth. I mean, I have seen so many clients on fixed incomes, low incomes that do build wealth. So you can do it, but it takes time and it's more planned. So we have to do little bits often. Not only do we have to invest, we have to look at making that money work as hard as possible for us. So once we are investing in something, making sure we're getting the best return. The power of compounding, and you know, I'm sure your listeners know, but compounding is we make some money on the money we've got, then we make a little bit more money on the little bit of money that we've made. And over the long term, that makes a big difference for us. And it's more important if you're on a lower income to get that working as hard as possible. So if you're investing, how well is it doing? If you don't know, that's okay, but get someone to help you that does, or learn, you know, do some research. I'm all for, there's a lot of information out there now. So, you know, what sort of return should you be looking at to make a difference over time? Because 1 or 2% of a difference return makes a huge difference in the end.
Massive. And I always think that as well. Like, I started out with investing just $5 a week. And, you know, for a lot of people, they're like, oh, is that even worth it? Yes, because for starters, it got me going. And sort of, you can learn by doing a little bit, which is really brilliant. But secondly, when you don't have much money, more time, massive hack. And, you know, okay, we all look at it. Literally everyone. I know people who started investing at 16 who are like, oh, I wish I started investing earlier. Literally everyone wishes they started earlier. And, you know, starting 10 years ago would be great. Starting today is better than starting in another 10 years. You know, the less money you have, the more time you can give it, you're gonna get ahead easier because that money goes in, earns money. The money you've earned also earns money. Our brains just aren't wired for how powerful that can be, right?
Yeah. You know, most clients I talk to, they underestimate what they can do in 20 years' time, but they really overestimate what they can do in the next 1 to 5 years. So, you know, it's talking to them saying, we're not going to change this overnight. So if we're on a lower income, we need time. So don't look in 1 to 5 years where we're going to end up. Let's look 20 years to give us an incentive to say, wow, that makes a difference. You know, if we're talking, I was doing some numbers on like KiwiSaver. If we leave our KiwiSaver fund just in the balanced, which is an average of 5% return, compared to if we make a conscious decision of, actually, we've got a lot of time, we don't need to use this for, you know, more than 10 years, we might put it in a growth fund, which averages a 7% return. Now that 2% return over the long term, so I'm talking 20 years because we're looking long term here, on a minimum wage earner makes an $80,000 difference at the end of 20 years. So we're not talking insignificant money. You know, this is life-changing for a lot of people. So that percentage of return and how hard it works is really important.
I love that. And people can look up, you can literally Google compound interest calculator and have a little play. Like, I'm not great with maths. My poor mum, who was a maths teacher and tried to tutor me, and I'm just like, I'm not great with numbers still, bless her. She did a good job. I'm not saying it was my mum's tutoring. It was the student that was the problem. But I can pull up these compound interest calculators. I chuck in some numbers. They do it all for you, and you can see the difference. And they'll often tell you, you put in this much and you get back that much. And I don't know about you, that's hugely motivating. You say $80,000 there, and I'm like, yes, please. I would like $80,000 just for changing a couple of settings.
Yeah,
right?
That's right. And that's not putting any more money in. Like, that's on a $10,000 a year investment. If we can do it, then it doesn't change what we've got to put in. So it's leaving aside that we're income capped. I get that. Like, you know, we've got an income cap. We're putting the same money in. We're just getting it working harder for us. So working harder and doing it early, doing it small and often, really important.
100%. She also mentioned her partner. I want to touch on the relationship dynamic because I felt bad for both her and her partner there because I actually had, maybe I'm over-identifying, I had a similar situation with myself and my husband before we started this business. He works on this business with me now. But before that, he was in the public sector, also very tight salary banded roles. And I was private sector, and I really aggressively pursued pay rises. I was quite shameless about it. But in a very unstable industry too, right? Media, where I remember one company I was at restructured top to bottom 3 times in 2 years. And that was not uncommon. That was all the time. So you're, you know, hustling and trying to get as much money as you can while being like, oh, might be redundant tomorrow. And you just kind of keep going because what else do you do? Meanwhile, he was paid slightly less than me, but in a very stable job. And I think for starters, stability, don't underestimate how important that is. If you're in a relationship where you're sharing finances and you can pull like that, bringing stability to the table, that's actually amazing. That's brilliant. You know, the other person can make these mad swings, but they're not very stable. Meanwhile, you can also be working together like, okay, maybe he's pursuing the aggressive pay rises, but she might be able to do things like, you know, the wonderful tactics you've been mentioning of going through, where is our money actually going? Can we be smarter with this? My husband did that too. He's brilliant at a price comparison. He'll compare all our insurances and be like, got this great rate. And I'm like, cool, sounds awesome. Do it. Don't care. And that's a really important part of the team too, right? And so when someone's in a team like that and they are with a partner and they maybe feel price income capped themselves, how do you think you can get people working together to make use of the strengths of their different situations?
And I think, you know, you've summarized it quite well in that.
I stole your words. Sorry.
it's great. So using their individual strengths. So you're in a relationship, you know, you're a partnership. This is how we work in life together. So if someone is income capped, they can be the person who's doing all the other things we talked about. So you can analyze the mortgages and don't set and forget these things. So these are not a set and forget, oh, I looked at that 5 years ago, it should be fine. Look at it annually or 6 monthly, or, you know, if you've got time, you can do this more often. So looking at mortgages, looking at insurance, looking at your overall living situation, does this still suit what we need now? Because a lot of people, and, you know, I see it with clients all the time, get very stuck in the current situation. You know, we need this house, we need that insurance, we need that level of cover. It's like, do you? Like, you know, having a look. So having one person do all of that, if their income's capped, if they've got time to do it as well, because income cap doesn't mean you've got lots of time. But if, you know, if that's what you can bring to the relationship, then that's excellent. So looking at expenses, how can we work better?
Exactly. And I think don't underestimate either contribution. Both are actually crucially important. You are both earning money for the household, even if one of you is doing that earning by saving. Saving and earning, they're both ending up with money in your back pocket that you can then put to work. And I think it's very easy when you're the person who is doing the saving to underestimate that contribution. But you must see this all the time. You would have clients who are earning six figures, spending it all, and in a very stressful situation, right? The saving and the strategy is important.
Mm-hmm. And that's where a lot of people assume because people earn a lot of money, they've got a lot of money. We don't see that all the time. And I would say, if I think about my clients, more often than not, the ones who earn the most don't have the most saved. So like our good savers, like those teachers, like they were just such a role model, I think, for me in terms of, you know, long-term investment, little bits often, don't assume because people have got big incomes. They're often the ones that are very lax with the spending, have got no structure around it. And they're the ones that if they get an increase in income from whatever it is or a decrease in expenses, it just becomes an increase in expense. So, you know, people were spending more. So you can just make such a difference if you're the person or the, you know, the person in the relationship who's keeping on top of what spending looks like, analyzing things, seeing what we can change, but also putting some, you know, money aside for fun. So we make sure we keep this fun and not feeling guilty about that. Really important. And that's where that person can add so much value to your happiness overall.
100%. Thank you so much. Kristen Sutherland, financial advisor from Enable Me, with the good tips there. Now, if you have a question, anything that you would like us to address in a future episode, send it through. It's ask@francescook.co.nz. Until next time, have a great day.
Just a note before you go. This podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.